Mass Effect kart racing, and I would, you know what I mean? Like, it could be like Burger Time, where I just work on the Citadel, like, and I'm making shakes for people, and like, throwing them across the bar, like I swear it could be anything.
Yeah,
it could be like
I'm probably there too.
Welcome to the Rated NA podcast for nerdappropriate.com number 52. I don't think we're going to have Skype problems today.
We are co-located.
This is crazy. We're all in the same room. You may hear some strange audio, and it may sound more like we're in a giant box. Because we don't have individual mics today, we're going back to our original setup from episodes 1 through 29.
The cave setup.
Yes, using the cave mic. And we're doing that because Matt is back in town.
I'm here.
For about 48 hours.
Hey.
Yes.
And then he is going to be exiled once again.
To the 30-degree,
yes,
frigid cold New York.
To the island of Elba.
Cool.
So the island of Elba.
That's where Napoleon was exiled the first time.
Ah.
Get it? Old Napoleon reference?
Yeah. Wow.
So how you been, man? We miss you so much.
I've been good. Just chilling.
Work's
like
good.
A villain. Yeah.
Getting ready for the big old Avengers.
It is. And actually, we have friends that are getting married that weekend. And I had told my boss I have to leave on the Friday that the movie launches.
So, did he tase you?
Almost. He was like, you can't. And I was like, well. And he's like, oh, we'll get it covered. Don't worry. So,
man.
I got the day.
Is that Seth's wedding? Thanks, Seth.
Yeah, Seth.
Way to screw everything up.
Does Seth listen?
No.
Oh. Well, thanks,
yeah.
Seth.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, too.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, no, he's getting married on the release weekend of The Avengers.
Oh. I might skip his wedding and just go to The Avengers. Sorry, buddy. Been waiting longer for this Avengers movie than your wedding. It's true.
So that's what I'm up to. How about you guys?
Busy work week as per usual.
Really? Because I thought you were sick one of those days.
Oh, I did. I took one day off.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about
stomach flu, right?
Yeah, I had a little bit of the genophage, if you know what I mean. A little bit of the reproductive problems. No, so I took a day off because I went to a Central Florida midnight release for Mass Effect and didn't go to work the next day.
That came out this week.
It did.
Oh, wow.
It did.
Yeah.
It's been occupying basically every moment of my free time.
Maybe
I was actually shocked. I texted you this morning, and I was like, hey, you want to do the podcast? And it took you a little while to respond. I, A, assumed you were playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, B, I was like, he's probably going to say no.
I did tell Scott, I'm like, it took a lot for me to get away from the part that I was at. Because I'm in the middle of some serious shit right now in that game. But
Maybe we should mention for our listeners that this will be a spoiler-free...
Yeah,
absolutely.
We will not be talking... I don't know any spoilers.
Yeah.
I haven't started
so
yet.
We're not going to really talk about Mass Effect at all. About the story of the game. We're going to talk about Mass Effect, but
yeah,
not...
and maybe some gameplay stuff,
yeah,
and some Mass Effect stuff. But we're not going to spoil a single thing because there are people that have not finished it yet.
So continue to listen.
Or started.
Yes.
Or started.
Or started it.
So, cool. Well, let's go over. We've got some, you know, Mass Effect launch night stories. We've got a story about Star Wars The Old Republic. There was a guild summit this past week, and we're going to talk about that for a minute. We do have some reviews, and not of Mass Effect, although kind of.
Other things have been happening.
I played I Am Alive, the new arcade title by Ubisoft. We've got Mass Effect Infiltrator, the iOS game. And then I've got a couple comic picks of the week. One for each of you. One suited towards,
whoa,
either one of you.
Very nice.
I'm really liking this segment.
And then the open thread we've got is, should there be a Mass Effect MMO? And I'm going to spoil part of it. We've already gotten one response.
And it says, no.
It would have been better if you put that. But...
We're just tying it all together. The whole show. We're tying the show
These
together.
Are all callbacks to previous episodes. We have the same jokes, essentially.
Yeah, we
After
really
32 episodes, it's just like, that one's from episode 16.
We need to hire some comedy writers,
We do. We need Mike D in here with his ridiculous videos. Anyway.
Can't get your mind off of it.
I know. It's blowing my mind. So let's talk about Mass Effect launch night.
So you went.
I did. I went to our local GameStop here. there was probably about 30 to 35. So it was a pretty good turnout for a little store. And, you know, I see the same people at all the launch events, like the Die Hard. It was fun, though. They did a trivia contest where you could win, like, posters and standees and stuff like that. Trivia questions are all super easy. They had...
I saw that you got the giant box.
I did. I got the oversized box. They asked me... I'll quiz you guys on the question they asked me.
I'm not going to know the answer, but...
You might know this. All right. What career did Liara have before she saved the galaxy?
Oh, she studied Prothean artifacts.
Yes! See,
whoa!
That's it. That was the one I got right. She's a Prothean archaeologist. And everyone looked in the store looked at me like I was a fucking alien, because I knew that.
Are you serious? Has anyone played the first game? That's when you find her.
Exactly, yeah. But the event was a lot of fun. That was the GameStop in Winter Park, Florida. They put on a pretty good little event. And they had Mass Effect 3 set up. Of course, nobody touched it because... No one wants to see it. So it literally, no one touched the console that it was on. And they had Street Fighter versus Tekken set up, which came out the same night.
Oh, nice.
So I think the guys may have been there for Street Fighter versus Tekken.
Was anyone else there to pick that game up?
I think just
them. Just the two of them?
Two of them,
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But we did have Hillary from Crabcat write us a nice report of the LA launch event, which is the big, big event with Silverman and Allie Hillis and Jennifer Hale and Casey Hudson, like basically the biggest one.
Was that
the
one that was live streamed on BioWare?
Yeah, that was the one on BioWare TV, and she wrote an awesome report of that, which we're going to have up on the site very soon. So we appreciate that.
I thought it was a little strange that as huge like as that launch was, they still filmed it like inside of a GameStop, you know?
Yeah.
So it's still, like there were like Wii games in the background. used.
It was strange. I did see some footage of it, but I agree.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see that article.
Yeah, me too. She took a lot of pictures too, and I can't wait to see them. So hopefully this week we'll get everything sussed out and we will be able to show you that article.
Awesome. Awesome.
So what else has been going on?
Okay, so something else that I thought would be relevant to talk about is SWTOR and the fact that they held a guild summit this past weekend with some, I guess, major guild leaders from the game to sort of talk about the direction of the game and things that they would like to see in it. And I thought it would be interesting to cover the topics that they were addressing in the game. And then maybe also talk about the fact that, like, I don't think any of us are playing SWTOR anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe why that's happened. So,
yeah.
Really quick, let me run down the schedule of events. All of this, by the way, they streamed from the SWTOR website. So if you want to see the Guild Summit, you can go back and review it here. So,
okay.
The things they talked about were the state of the game currently and what they're doing for game update 1.2, discussion about operations and flashpoints, PvP. Legacy, which I don't think does anything right now, other than
not quite yet. Yeah,
giving a name to your player.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I remember we talked about that, and then I was thinking about. It, I was like, oh, that's cool. We could do legacy characters, and then I realized that it's not even in the game yet.
Yeah, you get legacy levels, but it doesn't give you actually any rewards yet.
Huh.
And then, sort of the state of the economy / crew skills, because there's a lot of like, if you remember, there's a lot of hubbub about that and what happened with slicing and having to nerf it because it was like ruining the economy.
Mm-hmm.
A discussion for role-playing, and then a discussion for guild features, and then the UI.
Okay.
And then anything else. So, sort of the impressions that I get from this list is that they really just address, like, sort of typical MMO stuff. Like, it seems that... I guess what I'm trying to say is that I'd rather see more discussion of sort of the narrative and the story, which is what they really tried to sell the game on, like, in the weeks leading up to the release of the game was... The fact that it was like an engrossing story with all this voiceover dialogue and all this and that, and now all of a sudden it seems like it's now just narrowly focused on what you can do as a guild, PvP, like raiding, like elite loot, stuff like that. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think like you guys, I reached my level cap on my Sith Warrior, and I enjoy.
Like me.
So I reached the level cap of my Sith Warrior, and I really enjoyed the story all the way through. It was definitely grindy at points where I was just killing like nonstop for hours and hours and hours. But as soon as I hit level 50, I went back to my ship, I logged out, and I haven't been back in. because I don't have that desire to have the best piece of gear and all that stuff anymore.
So
there is no driving force for me to go beyond what the narrative of my character was. Once my character's story was over, sure, eventually I'd probably like to experience the other character stories, but I need a little bit of a break because it was, you know, so many hours to complete that 50 level, you know, quest, that I don't want to just reboot and start all over again as something else and have to do a lot of the same world quests, you know. So it is weird. I mean, a lot of the staples of MMOs are, you know, grinding, you know, walking really far distances, and that's a lot of the things that I think Star Wars got wrong. The story's great, but, you know.
There are a lot of people, too, that are, like, obsessed with being able to customize the UI, which is, like, crazy.
That's old school, like, MMO thing, though, you know? That's, like, I just... And to not beat up on Star Wars, I mean, part of the reason I haven't... Because I haven't turned it on, either. We were just talking about how I just got charged for my monthly raid or whatever, and I was like, I don't think I've turned it on since January. Like, I don't think I've honestly turned on the game. And part of it for me is not so much the game, because I am enjoying the story a lot, is that I don't really have a comfortable way to play right now. Like, I still don't have a desk at my house, and then I've got my laptop, so I have to set up, like, makeshift in the living room, and it's just uncomfortable, and I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And, like... You know, it's like we talked about before. Like, that's kind of why I feel like I'm a console gamer now. Because, like,
you can sit on your couch.
I can just sit on my fucking couch with a control in front of me and play.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe I'm not hardcore or whatever, but I don't know. Well, it's been very not so much. You know?
Micah brought up an interesting point, our friend Micah, and I think it was him that said that as soon as you get, like, one level off of your party, like, you can't quest together anymore.
Yeah.
And the thing that I noticed in particular is that when the game was first released in that first month and everybody had the trial period, I would probably see about 100 players in every environment that I went to. And then as soon as that 30 days ended, I probably saw about like 50 people in every environment that I was in. And then I actually did log on the other day just to see what was going on. I was on Alderaan. 11 people in the world with me. So how am I supposed to complete heroic quests?
Yeah.
There's 11 people. You know, it's safe to assume that 3 of them are probably... you know, Republic players.
Yeah.
And so the other 7, you know, not including myself, are probably off doing something
else.
It seems
like, you know, like, it's hard to fault the game, because I think the game is good.
The story's phenomenal.
Fantastic, you know, the way they work single player in, but it's like, I look at it, I'm like, man, maybe the 3 of us just aren't the MMO target audience anymore.
Well,
you know?
What I thought the game was going to be is I thought it was going to be less of, like, quote-unquote core MMO, like, cornerstones, and maybe trying to, like, bridge that gap between, like, RPG storytelling and sort of, like, cooperative play, trying to get away from,
I feel
like
they did some, but they did the cooperative storytelling through core MMO play. I mean, if you stripped all of Star Wars out, it's pretty straight up MMO.
I mean, at its core, it's designed to make you pay a monthly fee.
Right.
You know, it's not designed to, have a definitive ending. It's not designed to, like, it's designed to want to basically to make you addicted to it,
sure,
so that you, you know, keep paying that monthly fee forever. And there are so many things that are great about it, but
I'd want a little more out of the space combat. That's probably the only thing else that I would say.
Yeah, I totally agree with that,
because that was really, like, at the end, like, that was the only thing that kept me going in Galaxies, is because I mean, Galaxies was, like, a little too much as far as space combat went, because it was almost like Wing Commander, where you had to micromanage everything, but otherwise, that's really, like, one of the draws for me in SWTOR was that, and then it just ended up being, like, arcade levels almost.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree.
So anyways, I don't think we're all ready to give up on this yet, but we'll stay tuned, and we'll see...
I might
happen.
Suspend my payments for a couple months while I play Mass Effect.
Sure, and I think a lot of people are doing that too, so once that cools down, we'll see what happens over the summer.
So I just added this other bit of news, but I thought we could talk about it for a minute. But, big kind of news in the comic world this week was that DC Comics rebranded and relaunched their website. So they're on their third logo they just rebranded their logo recently. So the old DC logo is the blue circle with
the stars
in it. It says DC.
Yeah.
Awesome. That was like 50 years of that logo. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, they did the swoosh thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it has like a blue swoosh with DC written on it. They just rebranded again. And now it's like you can see it if you go to dccomics.com. It looks like a Peely sticker that's a D with a C on it.
What does that mean?
It. DC, and it's supposed to invoke in a page, I guess.
Oh, is it a page? Because it does look like a sticker.
I think it's supposed to be like, yeah, like you're reading a comic, I guess.
Oh, okay.
And then they relaunched this whole website, and they said, this is going to be the most interactive. It's gonna, you're going to be able to get any information you want about anything. And,
You're completely biased.
No, I'm not.
You're completely biased.
No, I'm not.
Who do you work for?
They actually, basically, their old site was very just like comic book driven. It was just kind of like, hey, we have a new comic book, read it. And that was like all they ever did. So now this is like, check out our characters and go through the history and see all this stuff. It just feels very, like, IO9 wrote an article about it, and they kind of bashed us in the middle of it, which was weird, but they basically said, it made me think of radio stations and TV stations, who are media companies at heart, you would think would have amazing online experiences, and they're always the worst experience you've ever dealt with in your life. Radio and TV have the worst websites.
Like, local radio websites look like GeoCities.
They're
god-awful.
They're like amazing. Some of the worst websites I've ever seen in my life.
It's because they get, like, some, like, Billy the Intern, like, make those a web page, Billy!
Well, but in the bash that, and I think rightfully so, the kind of knock that IO9 said was that comic book publishers notoriously have, like, clunky websites. And it's true. I mean, Marvel.com's clunky, and Image is clunky, and DC was previously clunky, and I think this one's even slightly clunky. But it's like, I kind of, part of what I wanted to bring up and ask you guys, and, you know, I guess it's weird because I work for Marvel, so it's weird for me to ask this, but, like, what would you want from a comic book website? Like, what, do you guys want access to information? Do you want to know about creators? Do you just want to know what's coming out?
Like, I would love, here's what I would love. As a person who, I don't read them as much as I used to, but a person who read comics for, like, most of my life, I would love, an encyclopedia, an interactive encyclopedia, like a database of characters that has art. It's almost like they used to have the handbooks of the dead and the Marvel handbooks of characters.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that in digital format, really clean and crisp, and almost have, you could have it so, and for younger kids as well, so you'd have it narrated, so you could be like, you could open and be like, Adam Warlock, and it would tell just like a nice little blurb about Adam Warlock, and have like, you know, what his first appearance is, what his powers are, different power levels, have that for every fucking character that's ever existed in the Marvel Universe.
You could have the guy from Mass Effect narrate all the...
Yes! Yes, I want like a nice clean codex of like information about Marvel stuff, and then you could do that same thing with...
Marvel, we can say DC.
Or comic books in general. And then I'd like to see... for those that want to get into the nuts and bolts, like, you know, artists and writers, they should have tons of information on them as well.
Let me hit you with this. What about StarWars.com? Have you seen that since they redesigned it?
No, I've been there.
You can go... Okay, so you can go to StarWars.com now, and they have, like, Connect and Shop and, like, do you want to watch things? Do you want to play games?
Yeah.
There's a search, so you can go in and search Admiral Akbar.
Yeah.
And then you pull up a page, and it's, like, a giant page, Admiral Akbar's head on it, description of who he is, the stats, like,
there you go.
Homeworld, weapon, affiliation, where does he appear, appearances, you know, Clone Wars.
So someone read my mind, apparently.
Yeah.
See, we have Marvel has a wiki with all of the character, like, every character that's ever been made and all their information. Finding that and understanding where it is on the site is near impossible, but, like, we have that, but it's not very, it's a wiki. It's not like what you're saying, which seems a lot more smooth and kind of cool. I just always, I'm amazed by this, you know, because being there, I've kind of seen the like how the sausage gets made, as Tim Schafer put it. Like, it's interesting to me to see these companies like DC or like Marvel, who have an insane back catalog of information. Like, I mean, they have decades upon decades of data on things that people love. You know, like, it's just all this stuff, and yet none of them seem to figure out like how to use that in a cohesively.
I think
good
that
way.
That the problem. That's the problem, though. The fact they have so much data and so much information and so much just all that history of all those books for all those years is just insane to, like, you know, to put it in a digital format for people to look at.
Yeah, I mean, well, the reboot, like, this website, the way it's designed now, this actually reminded me of Star Wars. That's what made me think of it.
Yeah.
So it seems like an attempt to get something close to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree.
But it's really, like you said, it's more like an information management project than it is like a design project. Mm. You know, it's kind of like a little bit of both, you know?
It has to, you know, I mean, Matt knows this quite well from firsthand experience, but if a site has to flow and has to look nice and has to actually want you to go to it. There's something like... It has to be aesthetically pleasing, and it has to load quickly. Everything just has to look nice and actually feel accommodating when you're on that site. Some sites, like, I'll go to once and I'll be like, oh, the information's cool, but I can't stand navigating this. Yeah. It drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. There has to be a happy medium somewhere.
Well, it was just kind of big industry news. They've rebranded yet again. They redesigned everything on their site. They're launching this new... There's supposedly they're trying to create this, like, deep experience of DC. I'm not feeling it. It feels very surface level to me.
The logo seems very cold. Like, I thought the previous logo was more comic book-ish.
I thought they're original. I mean, like, why rebrand a logo that's, like...
Classic.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can tweak it maybe a little bit. Like, could you imagine Coke, like, completely 100% rebranding their logo? Like, they did, and it failed. And
they went back to the...
Immediately back to the original.
Sort of the script, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, well, that is it. That is our news for today.
All right. We'll be right back in a few minutes with a bunch of reviews.
Sweet.
You did not play Mass Effect, which is good for this podcast, because we have something to talk about.
Yeah.
I did not. I had my pre-order for my collector's edition was down here, and I'm pretty sure GameStop would have just moved it to, I could have just picked it up at any GameStop or whatever, but I figured, I'm going to be in town, I'll come down and get it this weekend.
Yep.
I knew I wasn't going to get to play as much as I'd want to anyways.
With travel, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, I'll just wait. So I picked up I Am Alive on Wednesday. I actually tried to pick it up on Tuesday because I thought that's when it was coming out. And it
should have been out on
Wednesday morning.
You were looking forward to this, right?
I am. I was looking forward to this a lot. So I Am Alive is from Ubisoft. It's an arcade title. I think it was $15, if I remember correctly.
That's what Alan Wake was.
Yeah, it was like $15. And it follows the story of a guy trying to find his wife and kid after a massive... global disaster happens, and there's no zombies, there's no weird creatures, it's just a guy walking through a completely barren LA trying to find his wife. It's like, I would not call it survival horror necessarily, because it lacks a lot of those classic horror elements. What I would call it is survival adventure.
That's cool.
It feels like what I would imagine Uncharted feels like, how you control the character, and like it's a lot of like you're walking and then like it's not like fast paced walk jump like run jump, like you walk up to a thing and then you hit A and jump leap to the next platform or whatever and then pull yourself up.
That's kind of how that works.
You can climb and you have like a stamina meter for climbing.
It's like
and stuff
a Tomb
like
Raider kind of thing almost.
Yeah, like it feels very adventure, like classic adventure game,
cool.
And then mixed with this survival, this crazy survival element. So you start off the game, and I will say I haven't gotten super far in. I'm probably about, I don't know, 5-6 hours in, maybe. So this is somewhat of a first impressions, not necessarily a full review.
Okay.
But you start out the game, and you have a backpack with a gun with no bullets, and like a stamina boost, which is, I think, water.
Yeah.
Or water's health, and then you have like a soda that's stamina boost.
Oh, for climbing
like
and jumping
and
stuff like that?
Yeah. And I was like, okay. And then you start, and you just start walking around, like, and there's a lot of inner monologue going on. Kind of, they do cutscenes where they show, like, he's recording himself, like, trying to talk, leave a message for people to his wife and stuff, saying that he misses her.
So it sounds really deep for an arcade title.
It really is. I kind of hope it's episodic. Like, I'd love to see more of this get made for 10 or 15 bucks a piece. I'd totally buy it. The setting is unique, and it's fun.
Yeah.
It's the intense parts are intense, not because there's a bunch of stuff coming at you. They're intense because there's so little, and like it's like you and two guys, and the two guys have machetes and you have a gun with no bullets, and you're like basically trying to bluff your way. Like there's a lot of times where people will pull a gun on you or they'll have a knife on you and they're far away, and you put your hands up like this, and if you just kind of like keep your back to them and walk, just get away from them, you can kind of tell by how they're yelling at you whether they're going to try and come after you or not.
It's really unique, yeah.
Yeah, so, so they'll be like, don't come any closer, don't come any closer. And if you just kind of, like, do one of these numbers and just, like, yeah. All right, like, eventually you can just walk off and they won't bother you.
So is that part of the gameplay where it's, like, people are also afraid in the world?
Yeah, and so then you can pull your gun on them, even with zero bullets, and back them off of you. Because you're basically doing, like, a weird bluff system. But
yeah.
If you do it wrong or you pull your gun on three guys, like,
yeah,
they'll jump you. Like, the three guys will, like, look at you and you pull your gun on them and they'll be like, all right, and then they'll just charge at you.
So you're not, like, any kind of super badass.
No, you're not at all.
Yeah.
You're completely just a normal guy. Like, when you have the gun with zero bullets at the beginning of the game, he says, I've never even fired this thing.
Oh, wow.
And you're like, gee, like, the whole thing is just really bleak, and it's very... It reminded me of, if you've ever read or seen the movie of Cormac McCarthy's The Road,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot like that.
What do you think made Ubisoft make this an arcade title and not a full release? Do you
think
maybe it lost funding, or do you think this is, like, maybe an idea for a future model, how to, like...
Yeah, I'm hoping that what this is companies realizing that they can do smaller run... I think Double Fine essentially prove that you can do smaller run, more compact games to try stuff out and see how it goes, and they can be successful.
Yeah.
You know, like, as opposed to having, because I think if this had been a full title, a brand new IP, basically a brand new model of gameplay, like, they would have had to dump millions upon millions of dollars into marketing this thing just to get it into people's hands.
Yeah.
You know? And here I see an arcade title that came out at the same time of one of the largest games this year. And it probably did fine. You
mm-hmm.
know, like, people probably picked it up or will pick it up over the time.
And Ubisoft has a lot of fans, people that'll pick up
yeah.
really whatever they...
It felt very much like... I think it felt kind of like... The feel of the game is like... It seems like they took Splinter Cell's graphics engine and just made, like, a survival game inside of it. You
cool.
know, like, it looks really good. The gameplay is solid. The unique bluffing system's really cool. You can totally fuck it up. Some of it's predictable. Some of it you're like, oh, this person doesn't want to shoot me, or oh, this guy's going to come after me.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of it where you're just like, you really are guessing as to what you need to do or what's happening. You just try to bluff your way in and out of the game. So that's kind of initial. I mean, we can talk about it more maybe next week or the week after once I've beaten it. But
Sounds good.
It is it's really fun. Completely, don't let Mass Effect wash it out, because it is a super unique title, and I really hope that this does well enough that maybe they start doing some episodes of it or do more releases for it. But it's called
I
Am Alive. It's on the arcade. I think it's whatever the fake $15.
I think it's
$15.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Check it out.
I can't wait. I want to look at this myself.
Sounds good.
Yes.
Well, what else is on our short list of reviews for the day?
Do you want to talk about...
We can talk about just first impressions without revealing any spoilers.
Of Mass Effect 3.
Yeah
so Mass Effect 3.
No story at all.
It's really good.
How many hours are you in at this point?
Over 30.
And you?
I'm probably close to 20, but I'm trying to play my first playthrough on Insanity. So it's
because you're crazy. Okay,
yeah.
I'm trying to say 15 hours of.
Why would you start in Insanity?
I don't know. I wanted to make it really emotional.
It's true. It'll be really emotional. It's incredible. Everybody, you know, that was in the previous games or prior games, they're all back. All different levels of. How do I say this? Everybody you've ever met from the Mass Effect games, they're all back.
It's like the last episode
however
of Seinfeld.
However you treated them is definitely going to have repercussions for the game. So if you were an asshole to somebody or didn't do something right in the older games, then you may encounter some issues in this. But it is incredibly emotional. It is... the action this time is just above and beyond. Like, In Mass Effect 2, you had some missions that were like action set pieces, like
mm-hmm.
the suicide mission. Like, that is completely memorable.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every major mission in this game is of that quality.
Wow.
Incredibly cinematic. The entire game is just cinematic this time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a sequence, and this isn't a spoiler, but at all. It's just a sequence where Shepard and Jess decide they just want to go out, so they get a car. And they go ride around the Citadel in a car, and they go, like, skeet shooting on top of the Citadel for, like, 20 minutes and just have a conversation. And it's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And there's so many things that, like, if this character wasn't alive in my universe, the entire game would play out differently. So
yeah.
They must have created, like, the most bizarre algorithm for this game to work at all, because there's so many people that are such core parts of the story that could not be in your story.
Yeah, I think right now both of us are playing on a quote like perfect playthrough.
Yeah.
And so I agree that it's hard to imagine how this game would operate at all without, you know,
because I came back with all of my main characters, but I lost my crew.
You lost your crew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, even, I mean, I think even that has some kind of repercussion in the game. I will say that as, like, I mean, obviously I liked Mass Effect 2, but I wasn't, like, a super huge fan. I wasn't really stoked on it. Like, I thought the change from 1 to 2 was a little jarring, because I actually liked Mass Effect 1.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well, we all liked Mass Effect 1.
Well, I mean, I still play it, you know what I mean? Like, the gameplay was clunky, and I still like it, but...
Yeah.
I feel like this game took, like, the soul, like, the spirit of the first game, and, like, the gameplay improvements of the second game, and kind of put them together and made it better overall.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I wasn't really stoked on 2 because of, like, the whole thing with, like, Cerberus, and, like, everything was orange.
Well,
and,
we did talk about the Mass Effect 1. The thing that was so amazing about Mass Effect 1 is that it was, like, a classic story. You were up against a bad guy, and you knew he was a bad guy, and you were trying to get your team together and go fight this. You know, like, yes, more shit started opening up and unraveling when you were going after this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there was a sole focus the whole time. And 2 split that and kind of... I mean, it's the Star Wars pattern. They split that and you ended up kind of growing as a team and, like, building your universe and going after a set of villains, which were clearly evil, but it wasn't like... This is the bad guy I'm going to go kill in number 2. Like,
yeah.
There was no central enemy in number 2. There was a group that you were going after.
Right.
And then you had the weird Cerberus thing where it was like gray area. You weren't sure what was happening there. It was very, 2 was very, I think, supposed to be somewhat unsettling and a bridge to 3. You know?
I mean, like, the thing about 2 for me was that I thought that it sort of, like, took for granted, like, the wonderment of the universe in which the game took place. Like, Mass Effect 1, to me, like, with the music and presentation, it felt like you were in, like, this, like, bizarre future world, like, Epcot Center, World of Tomorrow kind of thing. And then 2 was just gritty, and it was just like, here's that universe, and, like, don't worry about it, like, we're just gonna get in there and start shooting. And they kind of brought back some of this, like, wonderment of, like, things
the universe,
like, the Citadel.
Feels more flushed out.
Yeah.
Did you not feel like... Because I feel like in number 2, so number 1, like I said, classic story, just like amazing cinematic experience of a story, and the set pieces were all great, and you're going after this guy. 2 really felt like a more emotional challenge to me than 1 did, though. The decisions I made in 2 were way harder than the ones
I can see.
And it was like, 2 to me was your Luke Skywalker in a cave figuring out whether you're going to be good or bad and where you're going and how, like, it was you growing as a character.
Yeah.
More so than number 1, because number 1 was you were this guy who just became a Spectre, and you were just like, you were just gonna be, you know, the I'm gonna run in and fix everything.
No,
guy.
I can see that. Yeah.
And 2 was like, there was no clear enemy, everything was very gray, and it was like your decisions. I mean, we've talked about it. There was decisions that all of us have put controllers down and been like, fuck, and like gotten up and walked around the living room, going like, I don't know what I'm gonna do on this.
Yeah.
Maybe just that grayness, like the sadness of it all, like kind of getting beat over the head was what kind of took it out of me. But
because I know 1 for you, and I will agree that as much as I hated the Mako, there is more of an experience to be able to go on to each planet and like see it,
like
and drive
exploring.
Around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we both missed that. Scott and I were talking about that earlier. We both kind of missed that level of exploration. But one thing that 3 does also that's not a spoiler at all is there are crew members on your ship that aren't party members that you don't fight with that are huge parts of the story and that are really, really, like, now there's a shuttle pilot. Like, for all your away missions, there's a shuttle pilot. And he's got a really deep, rich story, and he's there to talk to you after every mission just like your actual crew guys. And he'll, you know, zip in and shoot shit with the shuttle on occasion. It's awesome. I mean, it's like...
That makes me think of something I was going to ask. So one of the frustrating things that I had in 2 was that you always knew when you could talk to your teammates.
Yeah.
Did they kind of
repair
that at all, or is it the same?
It's not so much like... Like, in Mass Effect 2, it was clear, very clear that, like, after every mission, you had to go talk to each and every person on your ship. And this game doesn't really do that.
Okay.
I feel like you can kind of, like, converse with them at your leisure. Like, there are times where I feel like I just want to go check in with somebody just because we just did a mission that I thought was relevant to them.
And that's I guess that's kind of what I'm asking. It felt very, like, now talk to people.
The formula,
and then, like,
yeah.
If you try to talk to them any other time, they're like, oh, got nothing for you. And
yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of really great ambient dialogue this time around where you'll just walk in and two characters. That's another thing. Characters move around the ship. So, like, for instance, the new character, Freddie Burns Jr.'s character, James Vega, he's normally down in the cargo hold, but you may find him in the kitchen making an omelet, or you may find him in the gun battery talking to Garrus, or you may find him, you know, in the observatory with Ashley hanging out. So characters move around and converse with each other. So you can walk up and witness their conversations and butt in and talk. And it makes the crew seem much more alive and the world seem much more realistic. And the same thing happens on away missions and in town and stuff. You'll just walk across two NPCs having a conversation and be able to talk to them. So it's they did a great job. The universe feels completely real again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is something that the second game did lose. I'll give you that.
Yeah, definitely the best of the two previous games wrapped in together. And then, I don't know, we've talked about the multiplayer, at least the demo form in the previous podcast, but is there anything to add?
It's fucking great.
It's still good.
It's
so
good.
There's two more enemy types, you know, aside from the Cerberus enemy. They added... there's like, you know, we talked about you can buy upgrade packs. They're like sealed... you know, booster packs that you don't know what you're going to get. They added a third type, like a third, like, premium level. And, of course, like, the two, like, higher tier of items you can either buy for $1 or $2, like, of real money.
Yeah.
Or you can,
that, yep.
Yeah, or you can fight and just earn in-game credits and then buy them. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
If you're really, like, hurting, you can spend $2 and buy, like, a 60,000 credit pack.
Yeah.
And hope that you get something good in it. And, like, I mean, we all knew it was going to be there. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it course. Is what it is. But
yeah.
It's still like
but
a blast.
The multiplayer is fun, like, and it does tie into your regular game. It helps your galactic readiness level grow if you play some multiplayer, as does the iOS game. So,
yeah,
awesome.
Do you want to talk about this iOS game?
Yeah,
let's
do it
really
quick. So I haven't played very much of it, so I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, so released on the same day was the iOS game Mass Effect Infiltrator, which was made by the same studio that did the Dead Space iOS game, which was really, really good.
Yeah.
Good as far as iOS games are concerned, and good as far as, like, games are concerned, I suppose, because they did a really good job with, like, the graphics and levels and fighting and everything. So,
What about the story? What is the story of this Infiltrator game?
I have to admit that I'm not following the story too closely, but
okay.
I believe you are a Cerberus operative.
Okay.
Who is raiding a base.
Okay.
And I'm not totally remembering why we raided this base to begin with, because the day I bought the game, Mass Effect was out, my head was all, like, blurry, I just jumped in and started playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to, like, alert Alliance forces that whatever's happening on this base is, like, some crazy shit's going on, and, like, there's, like, experiments, like, with mutated, like, beasts and soldiers and stuff like that, and I believe it's a lab where people are being held against their will and experiments are being carried out on them.
Okay.
And I think as the infiltrator, you are working with people inside the base to sort of, like, uncover what's happening and put a stop to it.
And this is raising your galactic readiness level.
Okay, so let's
playing?
Yeah. So we'll talk about that real quick.
Let's talk about the galactic readiness level
because we're transitioning, I suppose. So, pretty much in the game. You fight enemies. So when you fight these enemies, you gain credits for killing them, and then sometimes the enemies drop intel. So you pick up these intel packets during the game, and then at the conclusion... So the game is basically played as a series of checkpoints. So after a battle, you can stop and go to the store, spend your credits on upgrades for your in-game character, and then you have intel. So you can take this intel and upload it to your Galaxy at War account, so this is all tied in through your EA Origin account, just like the game is on the console. And I think it's not, like, a huge deal, but the way it works out is that, like, I think for every 5 intel that you upload to the server, you get 1% galactic readiness level across all the territories.
Okay.
in the map.
It goes up really quickly during multiplayer, though.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that if you play multiplayer, like, I think
it doesn't matter.
We've played multiplayer 2 nights, or at least I have,
yeah.
And I went from, like, 55% to 86%.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But it decays over time.
Ah.
So it's always in a constant state of decay. So, like,
so,
in the time
like,
it took us to this podcast, it'll probably be down to 83.
Yeah, but if you consider that, like, in the time it takes me to collect 10 intel, which is probably me playing... Like, let's say you play one level over and over again.
Yeah.
You might be able to collect 10 intel maybe about 15 minutes. But, yeah. like, you could play multiplayer for 15 minutes and do the same way.
Yeah.
So the game does give you the option to take this intel and convert it to 100 credits for every piece of intel that you have. And then upgrades in the game, like, the cheapest one is, like, 1,000 credits to unlock something, 500 to upgrade it. And then, like, then it increases 1,000, 1,500, 2,500.
The cool thing is we have... a lot of options. If you like this universe, this and the fact that all this stuff is tied together in one way, shape, or form is pretty cool. I mean, that's, you know, we're talking about what we would want from a mobile experience, and this is one of the things that I think we said. We want it in some way to tie together, you know.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's the interesting thing about this game, is that the game starts out, in my opinion, being sort of like a Mass Effect game.
Okay.
And, like, I'm assuming I'm maybe midway or third of the way. It starts to feel like Dead Space.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is funny, because all of a sudden, like, the lab starts to deteriorate. The lights get, like, you know, it's not like, not brightly lit anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It becomes dark in the labs. Like,
yeah.
The emergency lights are on. Like, at one point, like, I'm running outside of bases, so I've got my helmet on, and I'm running around outside, like, in space.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, wait a second, you know, like...
I feel like I've done this before.
I think you're double-dipping a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, like, obviously the studio...
They probably used the same code.
Yeah, the studio that made Dead Space for iOS made this game, too. So, yeah, you are going to get to points in the game where you're like, oh, I think this is kind of like Dead Space a little bit. And you do have, like, there's, like, a boss fight that I just got to, and, like, it's a big beast, and you fight it Dead Space style, where you're just kind of running around in circles trying to kill it. By no means should that deter you from playing this game.
Yeah,
I guess I will say, like, it really just kind of like doesn't seem like it's always in the spirit of what a Mass Effect game is.
Right,
but it's not necessarily like a bad thing, because it's still fun to play. Like,
right.
It's a really good game.
Looks pretty too.
If you play Dead Space iOS, you'll love this. Like, if you're a fan of like those kind of like wild like iOS experiences, like the way people like freak out over how good like Infinity Blade looks or something like that, it's like it's that kind of thing. It's that reason to play the game.
Awesome.
And then like one last thing is that the gameplay is kind of bizarre, in the sense that you run with one side, you aim by like tapping the other side of the screen, but then when you want to shoot at an enemy, you actually have to tap on that enemy,
so you're moving hands
and you kind of like you kind of micro aim at that enemy, and then you can zoom out by tapping. And you can kind of, or you can tap over to someone else and start shooting them. So that gets a little dicey after a while. Is that you're like,
you better on the iPad?
It could be,
yeah.
Because you tap the upper corners to access your weapons and abilities.
Yeah.
But then like so basically like sometimes you mean to tap on another guy and then it taps you like out of your aim.
That's what I mean. Like the real estate's so small on an iPhone that you're kind of like, that's probably a very small difference in tapping from one
right.
Side
so
to the other.
You end up doing a little bit of frantic tapping, but
yeah.
I mean, that's probably my only complaint about the gameplay. But otherwise, it's super fun. It's really good.
Cool.
I recommend that anyone playing Mass Effect just pick it up as a good.
Now, is DataPad only for the iPad?
I think it is,
that's
but as far as I know, it hasn't been released yet.
Yeah, I don't think it has either.
I've checked the shop. It's not there.
Huh.
Cool.
So, Matt's Comic Picks of the Week.
Which, by the way, that's a gigantic piece of news that we totally didn't talk about at all. The iPad 3 came out 3 days ago.
Oh, yeah, iPad 3.
Did it actually come out?
But it got announced.
Oh,
okay.
Well, there was a Retina display and LTE.
Retina display, 4G LTE, better processor.
Better graphics
processor.
I think I'm getting one from work.
Oh, yeah?
Massive GPU.
Pretty excited about that.
Oh, cool.
The thing, they're pretty much saying that this is Apple's entry into the gaming market.
Oh,
so
okay.
We will see.
Well, we just covered it.
There you go. That was iPad news.
iPad 3 news. Okay, now Matt's comic book picks of the week.
So again, I've been reading comics every week. I've been going in, picking up a few books. I've been doing it differently. There are a couple books that I still subscribe to.
What do you mean, you're picking them differently now?
Yeah, my comic shop in Manhattan in Brooklyn is cool because I actually manage my subscription through Comixology online. So I pick them as my store, and then I subscribe to books.
Oh.
And then they pull the books for me.
Oh, that's
they
cool.
get my account, and they pull the books for me. So it's really easy to see what you're getting every week, and you can like just say, pull this for me. Like, you don't have to subscribe to books. So it's had me reading more varied books. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm just trying different stuff out. I've been picking up a lot of indie stuff, and this week is again two creator-owned projects. And this time, as opposed to just finding a sci-fi book for Scott,
okay,
I found one book for Ash and one book for Scott.
Okay.
So where should I start?
Start with Ash.
Ash.
Uh-oh.
There's a book, it's been a long-running series, well, not long-running, this is number 7 of the series. I actually went back and read some of the others because I enjoyed this one so much. Would have been my pick of the week, but the other one is unique and really awesome too, so I did a double. And it's called Orcstain.
I love orcs.
By a creator named James Stucco. Or Stucco, I think. It follows... It's a world that's in, like... It's a completely, like, fantasy world. And it's just orcs are all over the place. And there's these different tribes of orcs. And they're all kind of, like, battling. And then there's one orc who has, like, risen above and is trying to unite all the orc forces together. And then there's other creatures in the world that all, like, inhabit different parts. But they're all, like... It's, like, D&D-ish, I guess. But the art is, like... Like gonzo art, like it's crazy. Here, I've got screens you can take a peek at.
Awesome.
But the art is 100% just like makes the story that much better. And the way he writes the orcs is like hilarious. So they're very like grunty, like rah, rah, you know, like,
yeah.
We just kill and eat and murder and stab and like all this like just ridiculousness. Just awesome.
Oh, cool. It almost looks like old heavy metal art.
Yeah. Exactly. And so there's this. The story is a little, because I need to go back and finish some of the other ones. The story basically follows this,
an event or something?
No, there's like a guy who's foretold to be...
An oracle?
Yeah, whatever. He's got one eye, he's the orc with one eye, and he's like, he's going to be the demise of the guy who's trying to unite all the orc tribes.
Okay.
So like, the orc tribe guy is trying to get him to kill him, and then, so he's sending people out after him and stuff, and then there's this witch... her, who is also interested in this orc just because she wants to see what the power behind his eye is, like what the big deal, like what his power is, and basically his eye will turn red and then he goes nuts and just like gonzo kills everybody berserker style.
Alright.
And it's just awesome. Like the artwork's incredible. Like those are the mountain orcs that are like moving in on all these different creatures, or river orcs rather. And
for those listening, he's showing me pictures of mountains.
There's like a battle scene and they're all just like basically tearing each other apart, and it's just crazy total. That's a different comic. Crazy total like gore and just awesomely drawn. Just
that looks cool.
Fun story. So it's Orcstain number 7. It's on Image Comics. That is part one of the pick of the week. Part two of the pick of the week is also out on Image, I believe. Let me verify that real quick. I'm just going to say yes until I figure it out otherwise. This one is by Hickman, who writes... he wrote Pax Romana. He wrote The Red Wing, which are both like historical books, but like sci-fi versions of them, like twisted and changed a little bit.
Okay.
And currently he writes for Marvel. He writes the FF, which is like the new Fantastic Four. And I think he wrote S.H.I.E.L.D. too. This book is called The Manhattan Projects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the Manhattan Project, which was what created the atomic bomb. But instead, he has a bunch of different twists going on, but the biggest overarching twist, what it's about, is what if the Manhattan Project was just a front for the U.S. government to do, like, weird, totally odd things in the background. So basically, they fund this gigantic covert project to make an atomic bomb, but really what they're doing is funding, like... I mean, let me list you a couple of things. It's like divergence engines. They have artificial intelligence is being made, crazy artificial intelligence. Like all these projects going on underneath the guise of the Manhattan Project. Like, oh, we're just making an atomic bomb. Don't look any deeper than that. And then, like, if you go one level back, there's like just this insanity going on.
So it's like a ruse almost.
Yeah.
Like what we're really doing is this.
And then. The other governments are aware of this, and they have covert, like, super covert level things, too. There's, like, the Japanese have these, like, Zen-powered Buddhists that mind-control robots and send them in to, like, attack the U.S. base, and stuff happens in the first issue. And it's crazy. Like, these robots just, like, bust through a wall, and there's, like, regular soldiers with guns are, like, coming out and shooting at them, and they're, like, trying to take each other out, and the general's like, don't worry... The Buddhists can only power these things for 15 minutes at a time, and then they just die. Like, the robots just go away. And, like, there's these Buddhists out, like... He's like, I think they sent a team after the Buddhists, too. It's just insanity. Like, the stuff that's happening underneath the guise of this
thing. Did this just start? I only see
it just started. This number one just
came
out this week.
Awesome.
It is awesome. It's really fun. He twists the stories about the big names behind the Manhattan Project too. So you see Albert Einstein very briefly, and you see
Oppenheimer.
Oppenheimer is the main guy, but the story behind Oppenheimer, I won't ruin it, but basically he's born as twins.
Oh.
And there's a total fucked up storyline that they,
there's an
they
evil
do
Oppenheimer.
With that too. So it's just a really Pax Romana was like this. He did it, that was like about the church, and Red Wing was about I think back, I didn't read Red Wing, but it was some historical take too. He's got a lot of,
it's very cool.
He researches these stories a lot, and so he has a lot of real history in there, but he twists it in a way that makes it like totally fun and just crazy off the wallness. And this issue for a first issue was incredible. Like, it was totally worth it. So.
Super cool.
This looks awesome. I'm gonna bookmark this.
Called The Manhattan Projects. It's by Jonathan Hickman, great writer, and the artist is the same guy who did, I think, the Red Wing with him, and I don't remember his name off the top of my head. Nick Patera. He's awesome too. The art is really good. So check it out. Those are the two picks this week: Orkstein number 7 and the Manhattan Projects. Both creator-owned comics, and both very good.
Good times. That's awesome.
All right, we will be right back with our Twitter question, which was asking, should there be a Mass Effect MMO? We'll be back in just a minute.
So let's do our open thread. I thought maybe to tie this whole podcast together, since we've been talking about Mass Effect and SWTOR, want to raise the question, should there be someday a Mass Effect MMO?
Right. This kind of was born out of, I saw an interview with the BioWare doctors, and they were talking about the prospect of maybe a Mass Effect MMO. That might be something they want to explore, because obviously they have a lot of talent, a lot of talent that loves this universe, and so they don't want to, obviously this is, you know, this franchise does very well for them, so this isn't the end of Mass Effect by any means.
They have a gigantic universe to do whatever they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so fleshed out, and there's so much detail, and it's such a rich world, but what do you do with that, you know, now that the story's over? I mean, we don't know what happens yet, but I'm sure the universe doesn't explode and everybody dies.
Right.
Unless, of course, you have a really bad playthrough.
game
over. Universe ends.
They didn't even let you buy the next game.
No. It deletes your hard drive on your Xbox or your PC and like just formats the sucker. So the question is, should there be a Mass Effect MMO? And if so, what should it be like? And we sort of, before we started recording today, we were talking about it a little bit, and we had some ideas. But, Scott, what do you think you'd like to see from a Mass Effect MMO?
What would you like to see?
Yeah, see, I don't know that I'd want there to be a Mass Effect MMO. I was thinking about this earlier today, about, like, because, you know, they've always said, like, well, this isn't the end of the Mass Effect universe. And so I was wondering, like, what I want there to be. And I think I would want there to be, like, anything. Like, I would play any game that took place in the Mass Effect universe, and it doesn't even have to be a shooter. It could be like Mass Effect kart racing, and I would, you know what I mean? Like I swear, it could be anything.
Yeah,
it could be like,
I'm probably there too with you.
It could be like Burger Time, where I just work on the Citadel, yeah. Like, and I'm like making shakes for people,
yeah.
Like throwing them across the bar. Like, I just want to see more stuff in the universe. It doesn't have to be like a core game.
Yeah,
you know, it could be like an arcade title. So, anyways, I you know, like based on like my experience that I've had with SWTOR, about like how I'm kind of like in and out of it, I don't know that I'd want there to be a game. But like, same expectations for Star Wars. Like, I'd want to be able to hang out with my friends, want to shoot the shit, I want to like explore like the nooks and crannies of the universe in a way that like a story driven game like really doesn't allow you to do, you know, just to see things that aren't like movie worthy.
Do you want an MMO, or do you want like Skyrim, Mass Effect?
I don't know. I mean,
that's a good question.
I'm so afraid, yeah, about, like, you know, based on, like, how I've kind of, like, drifted away from SWTOR, I'm afraid to have a Mass Effect MMO.
Well, I mean, part of it is that, and like we said with SWTOR, this is what scares me about it, is that I don't want a classic MMO with Mass Effect layered over top of it.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we were talking about this briefly before the podcast started, but I would love to see them continue with the gameplay mechanic that they have now with a multiplayer, because I really do feel like it is a great, the four-player co-op against AI is a great time with your buddies. And if they can somehow take that formula, that four-player co-op formula, and have that be your party system, and then move through like almost the same like level design as the single-player campaign where you're actually fighting your way to an objective, if they, I mean, could somehow create a whole universe of encounters like that for four-player co-op and have those be your instances where it requires the whole team to fight cooperatively together. So someone's going to have to be, you know, a hacker. Someone's going to have to be, a biotic. Someone's going to have to be a soldier. And you're going to have to balance your team out that way and fight your way to different objectives. That would be incredible. And then use those as your experience gaining.
Would you be okay with a sort of a Gears of War style, like, four-player experience, like, with a game that's, like, maybe not super epic, but more like a 10 to 15 hour game, but you can choose the order in which you complete the levels, maybe?
Here's the problem, though. I would want it to be a persistent state world where, like, let's say you do that, you know, you run that mission, and you're like, well, now I want to get in my ship with my friends, and I want to go to that fucking moon over there and look around.
Okay.
And there may not be anything on it, but that's what I want to do. So you'd have all your headsets on, you're like, let's go check out the moon. And then you'd all drive around in the Hammerhead and check out the moon. And be like, well, there's nothing on this moon.
First of all, I would drive around in the Mako. And you could take the Hammerhead.
Okay, there you go. So but you see what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't have to be...
Wouldn't it be cool... This made me just think of this. Wouldn't it be cool if, like, we played an MMO that was a true persistent state world where if Scott completed a mission before me and then I went to look at it, it'd be like...
gone.
Like, I would see the remnants of whatever happened in Scott's mission. like, what if you could choose, like, a small version of an MMO where, like we could be like, this is our group. There's 10 of us in a group.
Yeah.
And then, like, anything that the 10 of us do...
Oh.
We could all see...
Almost like our own server.
Yeah, like, we could then see what happens.
So
like,
it'd
a
be
Minecraft...
like,
you know, MMO.
Yeah, like an
version.
Instance that only existed for the people that you agreed upon that you were going to bring into the game.
Yeah, and then, like,
okay.
You could see, like, if I was, like, I had, like, an old message from a medical station that was like, we're being attacked! And I was like, oh, shit! And I, like, go over there, and then, like, oh, it's just, like, a chasm of, like, death.
Yeah.
And it's like, Scott's been here and killed every single one of these fuckers, like, you know, like,
yeah.
Took everything out. And I'd be like,
yeah.
That's amazing! And then you could kind of explore through the remnants of what happened, and...
That's
kind of
brilliant, to,
yeah.
like... to basically flashpoint the entire game as opposed to just one part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be tricky, but I think the problem with MMOs is not everybody wants to be running around with thousands of strangers.
Yeah.
We've
yeah.
learned from, like, you know, World of Warcraft and Star Wars Galaxies and even Ultima Online that there's a large portion of the player population that just isn't going to get along, and it's wishful thinking to think that they are all going to get along and all going to work together all the time. Most of the time, it's not worth, you know, your time or your effort to
deal
with a lot of the people, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, having a smaller, like, localized experience would be pretty awesome, I think.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, if you, like, you could take, like, a Borderlands and turn it more, like, RPG-ish.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
The Borderlands formula is pretty awesome because that is like a nice like 50-60 hour story arc that you can play with friends. That's more
you could
so
just,
sort of like an MMO.
You could blend in some more of like the Mass Effect universe with like your starship, like a base. You know what I mean? Your ship would be your base.
Yeah.
And maybe like not every time does everybody together go out on the mission.
Yeah.
So it's like two people stay on the ship or they can't play and then like three people go out
and
do
something.
And
as long as like the level cap is high enough and the trees are deep enough, the skill trees are deep
mm-hmm.
enough, and enemy levels scale, you can even go back to older worlds that you've been on and fight, you know, fight enemies on those old worlds that you've been on.
So instead of a Mass Effect MMO, I think we all just agreed to like a Mass Effect Borderlands mashup.
Yeah.
Right? Is that
what we're... A four player co-op experience with friends, with, you know, you can go to the Citadel, you can go to Omega.
But I kind of
want to
mix a little bit of the Skyrim kind of persistence of it where
you'd like to explore as well?
Things get affected and are affected.
Yeah.
You know, like,
oh, okay.
Why can't the game, like, I feel like gaming is very, it's very, like, quick state, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
everything that happens, and then it's completely erased, and then you're back to where it was, you know,
okay.
unless you're in that single-player storyline where you're moving forward through a thing, but, like, why can't, like, you get in a fight at a house, and that house be destroyed, and then if I show up to that house is destroyed.
Oh, so you're saying, like, a persistent campaign, but like, because like four or five people have a stake in it,
yeah,
whatever one person decides to do like affects all
like
the
Ash could go rogue and fuck everything up and be like, what the fuck, why are you going rogue, you know, like, like that would be cool to me to be able to actually have a world in that sense.
I think that would encourage something very interesting that I don't think exists in a lot of, like, I mean, first of all, there are not a lot of four player co-op stories, but like it would encourage multiple playthroughs with the same four people. It's like, oh, we're gonna start a new like Mass Effect Borderlands campaign, but this time we're gonna be all evil.
Yeah.
Like together.
Yeah.
You know?
But that does beg the question, one of the biggest features of the Mass Effect universe is the story and the dialogue options, and that. So how do you? I mean, using Star Wars system, you could very well get away with multiple characters.
You just roll for it, right?
Yeah, you would roll for it. So I mean, they could steal that from SWTOR, use that, and then what? The thing that's going to be challenging, I think, is making the story as deep and rich if it's multiple people playing through it.
Yeah, and I think it's okay if it's not like Mass Effect 3 level like emotional storyline. You know what I mean? That's what I was saying. I'd be willing to take like a 15-hour like co-op experience where the story was like not necessarily on the galactic scale of like this story, the current story, but just to be a part of that universe and do something in it with like four people in a narrative, I think would be really awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be awesome as long as something's shooting at you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't have to be of the scale of the Reapers, but if you're like in a war between, let's say, like the
Batarians
and the Asari, then it's still going to be awesome.
And that's what I think Mass Effect does really well, which is the sense of everything being important, you know, whereas like, because not every game where something's shooting at you is interesting. There's plenty of them that suck and are boring as hell. Mass Effect excels at creating an existence of, like, you
know, combat is very emotional.
Everything seems important. You don't feel like, I've complained about the Revelations, where I wrote you and I was like, dude, you're totally right. I feel like I'm just downright murdering people.
Oh, in Assassin's Creed.
Like, I have, like, no idea why I'm killing anyone anymore. I'm just literally running through Constantinople, stabbing people in the face, and going, like...
Because you've lost your purpose.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
In Mass Effect, I don't feel like it's ever been like that. I've always thought about, like... I have weird times in Mass Effect where I weirdly think about, like, the guards that are running out. I'm, like, blasting through guards, and I'm like, who are these guys? They're just, like... What? Somebody's attacking? Oh my god! And then just like getting obliterated by my team of
three
people.
They just
mooks.
They have like no name tags. Yeah.
It just blows me away. But yeah, I think that's the key is like co-op is always better.
I think,
you know?
And hopefully what is in this game now is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the multiplayer offering.
I still say I want First Contact, or I want to play that game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that could be your game.
Yeah.
That could be this four-player game is like...
Yeah.
And maybe you can play from either side.
But I like the Turians so much I don't want to shoot them.
Well, then be Turians.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like, I think it'd be cool
play
to
both
have,
sides
like,
of the...
Both sides of...
They could just put two stories in without a lot of decision trees.
Yeah.
But, like, let you play the game from either side.
And the thing that's great is with the co-op that they have now, they already have some of, like, the physical features and, like, abilities of the different races already mapped out. Like,
it's interesting,
like,
that
Turians are
I thought that was interesting in the multiplayer, that like they have the classes, you know, that you're familiar with,
and then they have
the races in those classes, and then each race gets a different set of three abilities. So it's not like the regular game where like you get them all and you pick the, you know, the two or three you're gonna specialize in.
Yeah,
it's like, if you're, like, a human vanguard, you get a different set of abilities than if you were, like, the Drell vanguard, example, so.
And they all have different, like, armor levels and, like, you know, they're all animated differently. So, for instance, like, the Drell vanguard's melee ability is, like, a roundhouse kick, whereas...
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
So, did we get any responses from our Twitter wall?
Micah responded, and he kind of agrees in a way. He's saying... This is too long for a tweet, but an open world, be able to group at any level, and customizable housing and ships.
Yeah, I'm all with that. So take the formula that we just mapped out, add customizable ships and housing, and that would just
be awesome.
Do you really
need a customizable house? I can settle for the ship.
Yeah, he's always been big on housing.
He likes housing.
In
From
Galaxies? In Galaxies, he just spent hours decorating. So you know,
Minecraft.
He's a secret interior decorator.
My Galaxy's house is like a sad husk of like just a place where I would dump like my alts to like when I wasn't using them.
Yeah.
He just built like thousands of droid husks and sat them around.
I think I would settle for a ship if it had like the detail and complexity of the Normandy. I would be happy with
Normandy.
That.
Normandy. Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Just awesome. You wait. Just you wait.
I'm aware.
Anyone else? Any other responses?
We got a no.
Other than the no.
Yeah, we didn't really give give our community much
no.
of time
yeah,
to respond because
okay.
this was impromptu.
No one's looking at their Twitter right now anyways.
No. Everyone's
playing
Mass Effect.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We are out for the week. Of course, you can always find us at NerdAppropriate on Twitter or Facebook/NerdAppropriate or...
You can email us, MattScottNash@nerdappropriate.com.
Yes.
You can come to the site and comment and say hi.
And we will continue to ask that you rate us on iTunes until you actually do it.
Yay. People
are. We got a few. We got some
ratings. I'd like more.
Hanging in there. Maybe episode 100 we'll have.
Yeah.
We're all old and gray.
Old and gray. That's probably a year from now.
Old and gray.
What are your plans?
Ash's got some hard living he's going to do in the next few months.
Gutter living.
Oh, no.
All right, thank you guys so much, and we will see you next week probably with another...
When is PAX? How soon are we coming up?
Couple weeks.
Easter weekend is PAX.
Yeah.
So 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks?
Yeah.
So if you have plans to come to PAX, tell us about
it. Or is it the 1st of April or the 7th?
I know a bunch of our folks are going to PAX, so we'll have to buy them all pizza.
So keep on listening, we'll see you guys at PAX.
And we'll buy you pizza.
I think we are talking about doing some kind of... We want to do something.
Yeah, we'll do a tweet up.
Sweet.
Excellent.
All right. Later, guys.
See ya.
Isn't that how they always end?
Yeah,
but
play that song.
Right now, I mean, yeah. There you go.